couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week, we're going to be talking about the new Star Trek movie. That would be Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes.
And we'll talk...
A little movie that we've heard about.
Tiny little independent film. And we're also going to add a couple independent or smaller limited release films into the mix, like The Reluctant Fundamentalist and Terrence Malick's To the Wonder.
Yay!
Just to throw those out there, because they're in limited release. They're rolling around throughout the country, and we figured they're not a giant release nationwide, so throw those in the mix,
mm-hmm.
You know, to balance out Star Trek. We'll also talk some DVDs and Blu-rays, but first of all, yes! Happy dance.
Please sit down. Seriously, please sit down. I can't even take it.
I was declaring legitimate victory this week.
Legitimate
victory.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin actually did win this week.
Yes! I win. I predicted that Iron Man 3 would make $75 million kajillion
last
week.
You did, however, go over. So by Price is Right rules... I win.
Not by my legitimate victory rules. Miss 68 million for Iron Man 3.
I know. What was I thinking?
I was so much closer because Iron Man 3 made 73 million. It is now at 285 million. Pretty much a lock.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, pretty much a lock. It's going to be over 300 million by now. And it will most likely crack 400 million over the course of its domestic.
Without a problem, yes.
There's The Great Gatsby. Here's
Which
another
was a big
reason.
Surprise.
Yeah, it did very
50
well.
Million.
50
Go figure.
Million. What is happening, people?
Nobody thought that would happen.
Yeah. Well, you know what else? I get to declare victory on this, too.
Of course you do.
And wait till you hear how I declare victory. Only 33% of the screens showing The Great Gatsby were 3D tickets.
Okay.
Usually the percentage is much higher. It's right around 50 or more. Now...
So
now, yeah. Now, most outlets like Box Office Mojo and places like that say it's because, and this is actually the line. I don't know if you heard this. They said because the audience skewed heavily female, and females are not a
girls don't like 3D.
Basically, they're they're two dimensional creatures. No, that's not what they're saying at all. They're just saying that women as a audience block. Don't care as much about 3D. It's not a driving force
to
get them.
I'll buy that.
And that's quite possible. I also think it's because I started the discussion on whether or not it was too dark, as we talked about last week. And when people
Well,
hear,
I think, you know, we should check the numbers at one specific theater.
Well, that's true.
And, you know, maybe then you can declare victory.
Although I talked on multiple radio stations saying, look, if you're going to go see it in 3D, make sure they properly project it.
It's true.
Because there are consistent projection problems at certain places. But yeah, I'm declaring victory on that. Not that I didn't harm the box office of Great Gatsby. I just got the message out that it might be too dark in 3D. And then people are like, they ran away screaming, holding their panties.
Well, hey, you know what it is. I mean, we have been called the most influential voices in film.
That's true.
So
we have been called that.
Yes.
After The Great Gatsby, it's pretty impressive, $50 million. They were really worried about this. Warner Brothers was really concerned about this because they didn't know what it was going to do because it was a bad sign that it got moved from award season.
Well, yeah, and that's the strange thing. I mean, it's May.
Yeah.
That is not the time of year for a movie like that.
Yeah.
For a literary adaptation. You don't
really
release those in May.
No, it feels like an award season, but I think they moved it partly because they didn't want, what's his name, Leonardo DiCaprio. That guy.
That one guy.
That guy who acts in movies. They didn't want him.
He's an up-and-comer.
Because it wasn't originally slated to release on Christmas Day, and you would have had two big Leonardo DiCaprio movies releasing on Christmas Day, because Django Unchained also.
Right. Yep.
Then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, The Great Gatsby did well. I'm excited to see it on Blu-ray when it comes out, so I can see it properly.
If it looks good.
Mm-hmm. And then there was Pain and Gain. Which then just crashes dead at this point. It's like $5 million.
$5 million.
from 3 down to 10, it's a spread of less than $4 million between all these movies.
Right.
So, yeah, $5 million for Pain and Gain, then Tyler Perry Presents Peoples at 4.6. It couldn't even beat the Michael Bay movie that's been open for a couple weeks.
It's true.
So, part of it is he just produced this. He didn't direct
it.
He didn't write it.
But he put his name on it. Doesn't that count as something?
I suppose. it could have had, like, maybe it could have had more Satan in it and AIDS victims and all that kind of stuff that he likes to throw in temptation.
Oh, dear. Maybe there did.
Yeah, that's
maybe
possible.
It was there. Did you see it?
I know.
See?
I was
you don't
going
know.
To.
Don't judge. You don't know.
I'm declaring victory over this because I didn't see it.
You're declaring victory over Tyler Perry as well.
That's right. Victory over Tyler Perry. I have a flag with my face on it. I'm going to kick him over. I'm going to stab it in his stomach and declare his belly in the name of Kevin.
I think from now on we're going to have to retitle our introduction segment here.
Okay.
And call it the Kevin Carr Victory Segment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Anyways.
I'm used to taking a beating on a weekly basis. It's my job.
Wow.
That's why I get paid the big bucks here.
A verbal beating? What?
People don't know that.
Well, okay. You're starting rumors. You're starting rumors, KDK, that you can't... You're writing checks. Your mouth is writing checks that you can't afford to cash.
Nice. Nobody knows what goes on in this room.
That's true. So anyways, it goes down to like 42 and Oblivion and the Croods. And then we got Iron Man 3 is probably cracking $1 billion as we speak. It'll be over $1 billion, well over $1 billion by the end of the weekend.
I'm pretty sure that's because of you, too.
It's mine. I gave it 4 stars. I'm an influential voice in film. Thank you very much. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. If you want to go to fatguysatthemovies.com, you can find everything Fat Guys on there. And go to fatguysatthemovies.com/radio to get more information on the show. And if you go to facebook.com/FGATM, or you can catch me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
And I am KDK Reviews.
And we want to welcome a new affiliate. We've got...
Yes, we do.
1250 KBRF in Fergus Falls, Minnesota.
Hello, Minnesota.
Thank you for having the show. Hope... And I'm declaring victory over that, by the way. Victory?
Victory over Minnesota? Yeah. The entire state or...
Well,
just
yeah.
A part of it.
Well, all the lakes, at least.
All the lakes.
All the lakes in Minnesota are mine. Thank you, Fergus Falls. Welcome to the show. Anyways, let's move on to some movie news. I was going to give an arrest update because I was not arrested at the Star Trek Into Darkness screening.
I have
this
to
week.
Say, I was a little concerned.
My wife was too.
Mm-hmm.
She was very nervous.
I was keeping an eye on you during the screening because I was 2 rows back, and I was waiting to see if I could, you know, see any smoke rising from your ears during the, and you know, waiting for you to get up or start throwing a fit, and it didn't happen. I was pretty impressed that you were well behaved, generally. Until the end.
Well, because people were idiots and started talking like literally like 20 minutes until the end. They're like, oh, what do you think's going to happen? This one guy, he sounds like a South Park character. He talks like this.
He did. He was sitting in front of me. He actually, I believe, before the screening, he was wearing like a necktie around his forehead.
Yes, he was. He was like a drunk man at a wedding.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing. We'll talk more about the screening with that when we review the movie. But let's hit on a couple real quick things. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be in the next Toxic Avenger movie, which I guess is a reboot.
But he is not going to be the Toxic Avenger.
I don't know how that works out. Well, because he's not a 90-pound weakling.
No.
But he could play play Toxie.
He's not.
He's not.
No. From what I've read, my, you know, source. My source tells me that he is not playing Toxie.
Yeah.
He is playing some important person who trains him.
I think this is going to be a disaster. Or it'd be awesome. It'll like either be like a terrible movie or a awesomely bad movie that you can get drunk to.
It depends on how they play it.
Yeah.
You know, if they take it seriously.
Oh God, please don't take it seriously.
It is going to be a mess.
It's a trauma team release.
Yes.
They need to make a serious adaptation of Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD. That's what they need to do.
I'd take that.
We'll move on from that one. The only other thing we're going to talk about, Zach Braff now is getting his movie funded by a real studio.
Surprise!
Instead of the people who put money in. So go ask for your money back if you gave to that campaign. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk Star Trek. Because we can't!
and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
Victory! Victory!
Yeah, no, that was the last segment. This is no longer the Kevin Carr victory segment.
I'm declaring victory for the rest of my life.
That does not surprise me.
When your daughter turns one, I'm going to be like, victory! Like, you had nothing to do with this. Victory.
So now that we've moved on from the Kevin Carr victory segment, why don't we move into something else?
Yes, let's go Into Darkness.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Yes. Star Trek Into Darkness. After an attack on Starfleet, Chris Pine's Captain Kirk leads the crew of the Enterprise on a dangerous mission into enemy territory to track an intergalactic terrorist.
Oh.
You think that you can't make mistakes, but there's going to come a moment when you realize you're wrong about that. And you're going to get yourself and everyone under your command killed. You think you're safe. You are not.
I like that. That was a good sound effect.
That was my ooh-cat from Puss in Boots. What did you think of Star Trek? I know you loved the first movie, and you're never a big Star Trek fan to begin with.
I wasn't. Actually, before the last one, I made a point of not watching anything Star Trek before I saw it. So
you did your due diligence of doing nothing.
So I wanted to go into it from a newcomer's perspective.
Okay.
Someone who had never seen anything in the series before, other than, you know, a few late-night reruns. So I hadn't seen a single thing of Star Trek before.
Okay.
And it won me over because of the characters.
Mm.
You know, it has more depth than the usual sci-fi movie. Usually, you know, it's about the action, and it's about the effects, and, you know, it's all this stuff. And for me, I don't care. I need more than that.
Yeah.
And that's what J.J. Abrams does again with the follow-up.
Okay.
You know, he builds the characters in the first scene. You know who these characters are. You know their personalities. He sets up the personal conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what's going on with these people. And you can relate to them and connect with them. And that's what I really appreciate about his take on these movies, that it's not just a Star Trek movie.
Mm.
You know, you can go in, if it's the first time you've ever seen a Star Trek movie, you can follow it along. Because there are characters in it that you can get to know and understand. And it's more than just, you know, things blowing up.
Well, Abrams was not a fan of Star Trek
right.
before. He was a fan of Star Wars, which I think is going to be interesting when he does the next Star Wars movie, to see if his fanboyism affects it good or bad.
And I think with the first one, what he did was he took writers, some who were big fans and some who really hated the franchise, and put them together. And I think that is what makes his version of it really successful.
Yeah.
Because you have all of the little references for the fans. I mean, I've seen a few Star Trek movies since then.
Okay.
And, you know, it was fun for me watching all of these things. I'm like, oh, see, but later that happens to Spock, not to Kirk.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these things that make it fun, all these little references. And, yeah, you know, we talked about it before. There are a few that go a little beyond what was necessary, but it's fun.
I had no problem. Well, first of all, the first movie, 2009 Star Trek, I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Made my top 10 of the year. And I thought it was brilliant how they were able to make it completely consistent for the fans, for the most part, and completely accessible for people who had never seen it.
Exactly.
And I thought that was a feat among itself. This one still does that. It gets a little bit too cheeky at times with the overly referential meta jokes in there. There's some that works, and there's callbacks to other things in the series and the movies that are kind of cool to see. But there are parts. There's one in particular I was telling you about. I can't say it because it's a huge spoiler.
Yeah.
But there's a poor part in this movie where I did kind of put my head in my hands and just kind of go, oh no, that was really
cool. And I didn't mind it. I, you know, it was one that I was like, yeah, okay, but it made me laugh, and I'll take it.
I mean, it wasn't Nichelle Nichols doing a fan dance from Star Trek V when she was like 60.
Right.
Yeah. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's terrifying. That's the one Shatner directed. And
I was, however, looking for the whales.
The whales?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whales.
I'm hoping the whales will be in the next installment.
Well, who knows? They tend to be, they are kind of.
Can we go back to Star Trek in the 70s or in San Francisco in the 70s? Because that's what I would like to see.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
You know, the I liked this movie. just to me, there was just something missing. And maybe it was because I so loved the first one that this one just, there was just a little extra oomph. There was just some, you know, a little bit of seasoning that just wasn't there. And I've not been able to really put my finger on it. There are certain parts of it that I thought, there were elements to it that I thought were a little lazy at times.
Okay.
There's a scene where you see people in San Francisco because Starfleet is in San Francisco.
Right.
And they all, it's the laziest costume design. It's like everyone looks like they just walked off the set of Demolition Man. They're all in gray robes with hipster sunglasses on. And I'm like, wait, they're just not, it just, this looks so generic to me. It's things like that.
And I think that's kind of the idea, just because it's going on in the background and they don't want you to pay too much attention to it.
Yeah. But
because I missed it.
Did you?
It didn't really occur to me. It didn't.
It jumped out.
Register with me.
There's also part of the thing what was neat about the first one. This is spoilers for the first movie. They really divert from canon when they like wipe out Vulcan because that is not ever done in the original series, and that is a huge chasm that breaks the series or the new version of Star Trek from the old version. And when you take out an entire planet, there's always the sequel response of, can we do something bigger or more powerful? And they do something in the, I'm not going to, again, spoilery, kind of tiptoeing around, but I felt that it lacked the emotional impact that Vulcan's destruction had.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it just almost a couple times got, and I see this a lot in sequels, where it gets too big for the sake of being too big at times.
Okay.
And maybe that's what was missing. But, I mean, overall, I thought the cast was fine. I thought overall the writing was fine. The characters were pretty good. I think the characters were appropriate for what they were doing. Benedict Cumberbatch.
He is awesome.
I want to have a monocle and a big bushy walrus mustache every time I say his name. Benedict Cumberbatch! And I got a monocle and a top hat.
Nice. He has the best name in Hollywood.
It's the most awesome name.
He does.
But he's great as the villain. He's fantastic.
He is. And for me, that's a part of what I enjoyed about this movie. It's all about the balance.
Yeah.
Because you have this totally over-the-top villain who is, you know, so sinister.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you have Simon Pegg, who's Scotty, and he's goofy and fun.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, the drama, and you have the action, and you have Kirk and Spock, and it's all about the whole balance of it. And even with the cast, they manage to kind of capture the characters that are, you know, the classic iconic characters, but still give them their own touches.
Yeah.
And so that's what I appreciate. I appreciate the balance of it all.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to say, there's an old saying that the previous series, the original series of the Star Trek movies, is every other one was good.
Right.
The odd numbers were lame and the even numbers were the best ones.
Hmm.
2, 4, and 6 were the best ones. Mm-hmm. 1, 3, and 5 were varying degrees of eh. This one, I'd have to say that the stronger one, at least at this point, is the odd number. And we'll see what happens, because he's not going to do the next Star Trek because he's doing Star Wars.
Right.
He can't do both.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the series goes from here.
Mm-hmm. What's your final grade on this?
I'm going to say it rocks.
Ooh. You know what? I have to go with a... I have to go with a kind of rocks.
Hmm.
I know I just showed all 11 Star Trek movies to my kids and a bunch of the TV shows, and I just watched season 3 of The Next Generation
and
on
that
Blu-ray.
Could be part of the reason why.
I'm bringing more baggage to it.
Yes.
That's true.
Yep.
So, anyways, we'll go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk limited release movies. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Hello!
We are going to talk a little bit about some limited release movies. For those of you who don't know how movies are released, the big ones like Star Trek and Iron Man are released everywhere.
Right.
At once, usually overseas first.
Exactly.
But there's other movies that are smaller films, oftentimes independent movies, movies that aren't going to make $50 million its opening weekend, and they do what's called a rock and roll release, and they kind of just go from city to city, and they start in New York and LA. Yeah. And it just spreads out, and that way, it goes back to the days where they didn't want to buy 5,000 prints of these things. It's less of a deal now because It's all hard drives and digital stuff. But there's a couple of them that are floating around the country that we wanted to highlight.
Yes.
So you get started. You got one you wanted to share.
Sure. I will start with The Reluctant Fundamentalist.
Yes.
Meera Nair directs the story of a young Pakistani man whose American dream fades away as the towers come crashing down on 9/11.
Oh, so it's a comedy.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay.
It's a suspenseful story. They take a look. It starts with a professor in Pakistan who's kidnapped.
Okay.
And there's a journalist played by Liev Schreiber who comes in to interview him because this young man seems to be rumored to be coming up in the anti-American movement around Pakistan.
Okay.
So he goes through and tells his story of, you know, how things unfolded. And it really... it's a little heavy-handed at times, but
it's not one you would have checked out at the Cleveland Film Festival, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have watched it. Yeah. It wasn't on my comedy list. But it gives an interesting perspective, because okay. You don't often think about, you know, what happened to people like this who, after 9/11, you know, he was successful and on Wall Street and making lots of money. And all of a sudden, he has to deal with the prejudice and the fear that went with the terrorist attacks.
Sure.
So it is really interesting to see, you know, how he's treated and how he reacts to it. And it does give an interesting perspective.
Is it a Pakistani movie?
No.
Is it American or is it like British?
Well,
or something
it's
like
Meera Nair. So she is Indian, I believe. But
I she's probably in, I think she's Indian by birth, but is she? Is she British or American?
Like, naturalized? I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But she recently did Amelia. So she did the Amelia Earhart movie.
Oh.
So that was her last one.
That was awful.
Which, it was bad. This is
she
much better.
She did The Namesake. What was she known for? Because The Namesake was boring.
Didn't she do Mississippi Masala?
Was that what that was?
I believe so.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now I want chicken masala.
Nice.
I'm hungry now.
There you go.
Thank you for making me hungry, Kristen.
You're welcome. Anytime. So, it's an interesting movie. I think the one thing that it's missing is, again, talking about Star Trek, it's balance.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have Liev Schreiber coming in.
It's missing beaming and phasers.
Yes, something like that. And he's a journalist on the other side of the story. He's the American who ends up, you know, kind of helping out the government a little bit in his own way because of things that happened to him. And they could have explored his story a little bit more to give it a little more balance. It is a little bit one-sided, but it's still an interesting story. It's worth checking out.
Okay. So what do you give it?
It kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks. Mm-hmm. There you go. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. I'm going to take the next one. This is my favorite filmmaker of all time.
Yes. All of us totally love Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick, who's best known now for The Tree of Life. I think he was best known before for, like, The Thin Red Line. He's a very artistic director. And
we say artistic kindly. That is a nice way to put it.
Artistic. Artistic equals...
pretentious?
Pretentious.
Yes.
To the Wonder is his latest film. Now, it's been... It carries a 2012 release date, but I think it really just was released... I think it's
like
just like...
Like Toronto?
Film festival thing. It had its release... It's theatrical release in April, and it's making its way around the country.
I think it's interesting that this one didn't get a bigger release because of Tree of Life and how successful that one was. You would think that it would have been a little wider.
Tree of Life it got a lot of praise. It did not make much money.
No.
It made very little money, especially because part of what they did with it and the marketing of it is they were making it like it's the new Brad Pitt movie. And I run into this when I do radio interviews. They'll be like, what's the new Brad Pitt movie like? And I'm like,
it's not like a Brad Pitt movie.
It's not a Brad Pitt movie. And I ran into, we'll talk about Cloud Atlas later because that's that's on Blu-ray this week. But a lot of people, when I talk to them, they're like, what's this new Tom Hanks movie about? I'm like, it's not some wacky thing,
so
romantic comedy with him and Halle Berry. Nope. It's not really a Tom Hanks film, even though it is.
Right.
To the Wonder is, I'm not even going to blurb it because...
Because with Terrence Malick movies, there's no way to explain them usually.
Yeah, it's a Terrence Malick movie. It stars Ben Affleck and Olga Korolenko, who you would recognize from Quantum of Solace, and she was in Hitman. It also has Rachel McAdams in it for a little bit.
Interesting.
And it's basically an examination of the relationship between this couple and the problems they have and the emotions they go through and breakups and moving and stuff like that.
Oh, so it's a comedy.
It's, yeah. it's pretty much the Tree of Life without the dinosaurs and the tantric yoga at the end.
Those are my favorite parts.
I know. That was
the
most interesting.
The dinosaurs were the best part.
You're like, dinosaurs? What? But this one is... Here's the thing. I did not like this movie. And it's
really
typical Terrence Malick BS pretentious garbage. But if you like Terrence Malick movies...
Pretentious garbage.
You will probably like it. I mean, Olga Kurylenko plays a woman. She's from Paris. And so it's not narrated as much as it just has this voiceover. And they did that in Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
You have this voiceover and she's speaking in French. So now you got to deal with subtitles for crying out loud. And
really?
Yeah.
The voiceover is in French. That's just
half
not
of
right.
It's in French. But it's that standard sort of mosaic poem, visual poem that he puts together that's not realistic at all. And
right.
It's supposed to inhabit the love and emotion. But really, it turns into a lot of what I consider at times trite imagery.
Mm-hmm.
It repeats some of the imagery from Tree of Life with the hand in the air over the, you know, the sun and the light coming through the fingers and stuff like that. Fans of Terrence Malick will love it. But the thing is, it's done on a really fiercely small budget, you can tell.
Hmm.
Whereas Tree of Life had a much larger budget.
He has been cranking them out lately.
I mean,
how long was it between Tree of Life and the film before that? That was...
Oh, no, New World. That
right.
was like 2004 or
right.
something.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
And he, you know, took his time between movies. And now he's just cranking them out. Because
uh-huh.
he's got, what, 3 in the works right now?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, if you count... To the Wonder.
Right.
Then he's got 2 more. He's got one that's, I think, got a title to it. The other one's untitled. Anyways, it's opening in Columbus, which is obviously where we're from. So it's know what you're getting into. Don't go into this and be like, hey, it's the new Ben Affleck movie. It's the rom-com with Ben Affleck and Olga Kurylenko.
That would be cute. I could watch that.
She does get naked in it, though, which... I only bring up...
Does that give it an extra star?
No.
It always gives it an extra star.
But I bring that up because it's interesting because she did Hitman, which is a terrible movie, but she got naked in that. And then she got the James Bond role in
yes.
Quantum of Solace.
Mm-hmm.
And she announced, she's like, I'm not going to do nude anymore. I'm going to be a serious actor. And her career never really took off. She did a bunch of smaller movies, you know, like Here, There, Be Dragons. And
right.
She was in 7 Psychopaths for like 16 seconds.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And even though she's all over the posters, one of the psychopaths, she
not so much.
There's not anything there. So I guess she's now naked. She'll take off her clothes for
Terrence Malick. Well, you know, it's Terrence Malick.
But Ben Affleck doesn't. He just takes off his shirt. Ben Affleck, shame on you. You should get naked for your directors.
He doesn't need to anymore.
He's
got a career.
That guy, he's going nowhere. He's never going to win any significant award.
Until he takes his clothes off.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that gets a sucks from me. It's a full-on sucks. But with that caveat that if you want a... It doesn't have the glorious cinematography that Tree of Life had.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more muted and somber. It looks like it's shot on a video camera, which it probably was. I mean, digital.
And
video.
Really, Tree of Life, the visuals were the only thing that made that movie interesting
yeah.
at all. So there
Watchable.
You go.
It's
wah,
shorter, wah. Though. It's shorter. It's like 2 hours.
Well, at least there's that.
Anyways, real quick, we got about 30 seconds. What do you think? Do you want me to go first?
Go ahead.
I'm
going to
declare victory anyways.
Yeah, you might as well.
$85 million for Star Trek.
I'm going to give it 88.
88?
Yes.
Is that for the 3-day spread or the 4-day spread?
That is for the 3-day.
3-day? Okay.
Yeah, for the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the talks is that it's going to crack $100 million for the 4-day.
That's what they're saying. We'll see.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it might if it gets maybe exactly $100 million. For the 4-day,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going 88, 85, and watch, it'll come in like 86 and a half.
Nice.
I'll still
Let's
declare
hope so.
Victory.
I would like to see that. Let's work on that.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk DVDs.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer-Kramer and Kevin Carr.
Where I always keep Kristen on her toes with crazy stuff going on.
It's true. There's always something crazy going on here.
Crazy! I'm doing dances.
I know.
I'm declaring victory over Tyler Perry's belly.
It's terrible. This is why I drink.
You know, Tyler Perry was not in Star Trek. This one. What
That's
happened?
True. Tyler Perry was not in Star Trek.
He was in the first one?
There were a lot of... a lot of characters that were in there that, you know, were around in the background that, you know, I figured Tyler Perry could have shown up and just been blown up in something, you know, in a terrorist attack.
That could have happened.
Yeah. That's what we're just going to say.
All right. Well,
he was in the building when it blew up.
That happens.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Let's move on to a voicemail. We got another voicemail from Thomas from Seattle. Thanks, Thomas, for calling in.
Thomas, I'm on the show, too.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel sad.
You don't even mention Kristen's name in this voicemail.
I know. Hello, Kevin. I'm going to let you answer his question because he asked you.
All right. Well, let's hear the question first. Before we start weeping, we'll move on. Here's the question.
I had a question about J.J. Abrams because Star Trek is coming out. Yeah, I like J.J. and all, but I'm wondering where does his elevation to him being like the greatest guy ever come from? I mean, I liked Mission Impossible 3, but it seems like nobody else really cared about that movie. It seems like people have fallen out of love with Lost. It was a big deal at the time, but now it's like it's not in the conversation anymore. And plus, he was only involved for like the first season or two. So I'm just wondering, does it seem kind of strange that he's been elevated to like the new Spielberg, where his list of credits isn't really that long, and there's a lot of misses on there? You know, like those TV shows like Alcatraz and Revolution and Undercover. Those shows were canceled within a year, so nobody cared about him. And JJ, I mean, I think he's okay, but I don't understand all the fanboy love. Anyway, thanks, Kevin. Thomas from Seattle, out.
J.J. Abrams as the Golden Boy, and I think he became the Golden Boy after Star Trek. He was not sort of like that. He could do no wrong. It was a bit of a gamble to give him Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? You look like you're ready to bust out laughing. You're like, I'm not answering.
I'm not answering. This isn't my question.
Go on.
I agree. I think he kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had his hands in a lot of things for a long time. I mean, I was looking up his filmography. I mean, you go back to the 90s, and he's got movies like Regarding Henry. And
he wrote that, didn't he?
He produced it.
Okay.
Yeah. And The Pallbearer with David Schwimmer.
God, that was a bad movie.
I mean, he was involved in movies like that. And then all of a sudden, he comes out of nowhere, and he starts working on things like Lost and Alias and Felicity. And
he started with Felicity.
Yeah.
And then he moved into Alias and then Lost, so he kind of had this stair-stepping. Then after Lost, he couldn't really... He put his hands on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them went nowhere, like Six Degrees and stuff like that.
I think the mystique was built with Cloverfield when he produced that. But yeah, I agree. I think Star Trek cemented that.
Well, I think it's he's got a very similar path that Joss Whedon had.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's had these successful shows and he's been a known name and he had a couple misfires. I mean, Mission Impossible 3 did not do well.
Right.
Even though I liked it. I mean, nobody listened to me.
But that was before you were one of the most influential voices in film.
That's right. I'd still declare victory over Mission Impossible 3. But yeah, he has been knocking around. And then he followed up Star Trek with Super 8, did very well. The next Star Trek movie, then he got given Star Wars. It's not your failures that really define you in Hollywood. You can have a lot of failures, especially if they're not well-known failures. If they're massive bombs, you get to be well-known. But all the things he kind of had failures
on... Hollywood is kind of forgiving in that way.
Well, yeah.
They'll give you another chance.
They can pin it on other people. A lot of nobody blamed J.J. Abrams for Mission Impossible 3's soft box office.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody blamed Tom Cruise. Nobody blamed J.J. Abrams because these shows that he had started didn't do well. A lot of shows start and don't do well. So, yeah, it's I think can he do no wrong? Oh, no. Every director can do wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And he will.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? I mean, Star Wars 7, excuse me, might be an absolute unmitigated disaster.
Oh.
Who knows?
Fingers crossed.
And I will probably still love it as a fanboy. But he has complete possibility to fail. I think if there's anything that he does that is a little bit dangerous is he relies a little bit too much on, like, David Lindelof and Roberto Orci Andrew Kurtzman.
He works very closely with his team.
Yeah, that can get you into a little bit of trouble. I think we're getting overly saturated with David Lindelof now.
Mm-hmm.
And Orci and Kurtzman are sort of, like, writing everything. It's sort of homogenizing the blockbusters at this point.
Yeah.
So you have that possibility. I mean, even TV, he's had a couple successes, but Lost, everyone remembers Lost. But when was the last time you saw Lost syndicated?
Mm-hmm. I never watched it.
I love the show.
It was one of those things that it got so far into it, and people were like, oh, this is the greatest show. I'm like, oh, I'm too far behind.
You can't pick up Lost in the middle.
No.
No way.
I gave up.
So that's your answer. I mean, he's given the credibility because he's done some great things, and he's been very noticeable, and his failures have not really been pinned on him and necessarily his fault.
It is interesting, though. I think people do... It is with Steven Spielberg. How Steven Spielberg puts out a movie and you're like, it's Steven Spielberg! And it's the same thing with J.J. Abrams. I mean, it was Super 8. Super 8 was okay. Did I love it? No.
Yeah, but see, Spielberg went through a slump, too. And he had a slump at the beginning of the 90s.
He's gone through plenty of them.
And he had, a resurgence with Schindler's List and Jurassic Park, and then he slumped back down in the 90s.
Yeah, so you never know.
Yeah. Anyways, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Thank you for calling, Thomas.
Yay, thank you, Thomas. And we are at another segment, which we like to call...
the DVD Roundup.
Yeehaw! Let's talk about the movies that are out on DVD and Blu-ray and digital download and all those various elements. Cloud Atlas.
Yes.
Is leading the pack for me. Oddly
enough, I would say in this week.
What I find most curious about Cloud Atlas is it's been 7 months since this movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in October.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Which is huge. That's a huge window between movie and DVD.
And it wasn't like it was a huge success that people, you know, that it was in theaters for so long or that it had such huge award season buzz and it's still carrying that over. It is kind of random that it took so long.
It's kind of odd. And I remember they originally slated it for February.
Hmm.
And then they pulled it, which seemed like the more normal time. Here's the thing. I watched it again. I have to say I really like this movie. Hmm. I wish people would give it a chance. It's different.
It is. And it's difficult.
Yeah.
That is the challenge with this movie. It's all over the place. And
there's
have no idea what's going on in this movie.
There's a lot to wrap your brain around in this. What's neat about it is when you watch it on Blu-ray, you've got subtitles. So especially there's one of the story segments is about it takes place in the future and people have a different dialect.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of hard to understand what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps. That definitely helps. But it also has some interesting supplemental features where they talk about where they've connected different things and what they chose not to do and what they have done.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear the Wachowskis and Tukwer talk about what they did and the choices they made. And I think that's good.
Yeah, it is a really interesting movie.
Yep.
It's a difficult one, though. It's challenging.
It's worth getting again.
It is, yeah.
There's also Texas Chainsaw, which was the latest Texas Chainsaw movie. It's in 3D. I'm assuming you can get it on 3D Blu-ray. It was funny and silly and ridiculous and made no sense at all, even in the context of the movies.
Yay.
But it does something a little bit different, which is a bit of a feat for a Texas Chainsaw movie. There's also Frankie Go Boom, which I haven't had a chance to watch yet. I've got the Blu-ray at home. Have you seen it?
I haven't, no.
Right. There's also Liz and Dick, which is Lindsay Lohan's absolute and utter train wreck on television playing Elizabeth Taylor.
Lindsay.
Which there's a YouTube video of every time she just sighs. And it's just a collection of that.
Well, everybody's got her thing.
Well, you know. There's also Dexter Season 7. I wish Dexter Season 8 he would then just have Lindsay Lohan with him as his sidekick sighing as he kills somebody. Dexter, give me my Alderad or whatever her
nice
hyperactivity medication she has. The Stinger of the Week is a glimpse inside the mind of Charles Swan III, which could be good because it's Roman Coppola, but it's not. It is just
because it's Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, it's this weird Walter Mitty version of what Charlie Sheen is trying to justify his life to be. It's bad. Oh, bad, bad.
It looks pretty bad. Oh, I haven't gotten beyond the trailer, and that's, that was pretty much good enough for me.
It's 90 minutes long. It's less than 90 minutes long, and it's excruciating. It's like passing a kidney stone. Anyways, that is the DVDs and Blu-rays we've got. Just a couple more seconds. So let's wrap up the reviews. Only one review we're really talking about.
Pretty much.
Star Trek, you said kind of... Oh, you said rocks.
I said it rocks.
I said kind of rocks, but you also said Reluctant Fundamentalist.
Kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks. I, of course, said... I almost said Tree of Life. Tree of Wonder.
Same thing.
Sucks. But if you like that sort of thing, box office prediction. You said what, 88? You pulled the Prices Right thing on me.
I believe I did say 88. I don't know. I have to go back to my notes.
And I said 85. And we'll see whatever's more accurate is what
and
I'm going to say.
Kevin will win.
I'm declaring victory right now.
Mm-hmm.
Next week we're going to be talking about Fast and Furious 6, Epic, The Hangover, and The Hangover Part 3. Talk to you guys later.
See ya.